Hello, you're listening to the KGFC Festival Talks podcast. I'm your host, Craig Horsley, and we are coming to you from Kew Gardens Festival of Cinema. We've been running since August 3rd, and we complete our wonderful festival on August 12th. We've been playing at the UA Midway in Forest Hills, which is on Continental Avenue and Queens Boulevard, and also at the Queens Museum, located in Flushing Meadows, Corona Park. That's the home of the 1965 World's Fair, and also still the home of the iconic Unisphere. And today we are talking with the director and writer of Virginia, Minnesota. His name is Daniel Stein, and the wonderful actress who starred in one of the stars of the film, Rachel Hendricks. Welcome.
Hey, thanks for having us.
Thank you. Yeah, glad to be here.
So I don't talk about the film because I don't want to make any spoilers for our listeners. So, Daniel, please tell us about the film.
Sure. Yeah, it's a it's a kind of a comedy drama, and it's about these girls who grew up in a home for. They were these kids that came from neglected families, and they grew up in this home on the Minnesota coastline, right on Lake Superior. And when they were younger, there was a tragedy that struck, and the home kind of had to shut down, and the foster kids were all sent their own separate ways. And the story picks up 15 years after that event, where the kids are, adults now, are summoned back to open the will of the lady that ran the place, this really strict lady that ran the place. And one of them doesn't want to come back. So one of her best friend has to kind of force her back so she can get it over with, open this will, move on with their lives. And it becomes kind of an adventure getting back to that house, and they encounter some local Minnesota legends, and it gets kind of funny and strange and dramatic, and yeah.
Yeah, it's quite an adventure. I mean, and you could see it through the various locations and the people.
Yes,
that you have in the film. You've got some troubadours and performers. What was your inspiration for this film?
You know, it comes from a couple different places. My grandfather, he ran a home not too dissimilar to the one that I described there, but in Pennsylvania. But it was for boys from these kind of broken families. And growing up, he would tell me some stories that were both kind of. Some were funny, some were sad, some were kind of inspiring, and I always wanted to make a film that kind of touched on or built on some of the stories that he would tell me. So, and then when I found some of the locations in Minnesota, I was so inspired by that, some of the incredible scenery and some of the quirky people and that I met and stuff. So I kind of blended some ideas together, and of course, the more I learned about the legends and the folklore of that area too, it just seemed ripe for storytelling, you know.
I mean, the locations are beautiful, and you've got a little bit of Viking stories in there, and you've got some great animation. It starts with some wonderful animation.
Film.
Now, Rachel, you are the best friend who's on. I mean, you were the best friend, but 15 years earlier, you really hadn't seen your friend. So it was not only a journey geographically, but emotionally also for your character.
Right, I think it was sort of an anticlimactic 15-year reunion when she finally sees Addison for the first time after they've separated when this tragedy happens. And you have, I think as a viewer when you're watching that moment, it's interesting how we all might be able to imagine what that would be like to come back to where you left off after 15 years. But I think what essentially you find out in the film is they're really still these kids at this home that have postponed so much of their growing up, having not dealt with it yet. And it's interesting to see the anticlimactic moment sort of play out the way that it does, and the tension and the frustrations that Lyle's bringing with her. And geographically, from the home, you're looking at like an hour and a half, 2 hour drive actually to get from where they were in Larsmont to Grand Marais. We don't see that in the film. I don't think it's very relevant, but she slept in her car and she's really aggravated that Addison has put her foot down and said, I'm not coming back. And she has to change her mind.
The film has so many scenes, so many. What kind of changes did you, as the writer and the director, make while the film was being, you know, filmed, because of some logistical issues or anything like that?
Well, we had a lot of those. We had a lot of logistical issues. It was a smaller budget film, so we didn't really have makeup days, really, and we kind of had to roll with it no matter what the weather or anything like that. But we had a couple. There are two scenes in the movie that were completely made up on the spot, which is both challenging and annoying at the same time, but they turned out, you know. But we had one day that was going to be completely filmed outdoors in the woods with this kind of monster figure or whatever. Yes. But some rain hit and it wasn't going to let up. And it turns out that the costume, this monster costume, was made of yak fur. And for some reason, the yak fur couldn't get wet.
Okay.
So I don't know why. It seems like yaks should be able to get wet. But anyway, I had to kind of improvise and move the whole thing inside this random camp building and make up a whole sequence there.
And so the camp building wasn't originally in the scene?
No, not at all.
Wow, that was fortuitous that there was one there.
Yeah, and yes, exactly. And we kind of made it up within about a 30-minute time period and said, all right, now this is what's going to happen, and turned out to be one of the funnier sequences in the film. But that happened a couple times, that we had a location drop out one day. They had a wedding there, and they said, sorry, we didn't know we can't have a wedding simultaneously. And so we had to rewrite some stuff and move things around. And every day it was something new, but that, you know, that's independent filmmaking.
How long was the shooting schedule?
I think we did it in about 25 days or something like that. Yeah, about 25 days. We had to go 2 or 3 days longer than planned, I think, but which cost a bit, but you know.
And it was quite ambitious because you were wanting to be true to these locations by actually shooting at these locations, and so you have to company move so many times to just get down the coast. So you're traveling with Lyle and Addison as they're going down. The company was actually doing
big distances between these places. You know, we kind of broke a lot of rules of what to do for a first-time filmmaker. You know, pick a location, do something there. We had some 20 locations stretching over 1,000 miles or something.
And how many cast members? I mean, I'm sure some of them were extras or whatever, but still, you had troubadour performers and people in Viking costumes and
it was big.
Amazing.
It was big.
Locals coming through for you.
We had people, the locals there in Duluth and Grand Marais and everywhere in between, really, really went to bat for us, and they had a lot of fun with it and stuff. So we were able to tell a very intimate story on a kind of a grand scale, you know, a little budget that we wanted to make this little movie feel like it was big, you know, and it kind of does.
There's an interesting boat scene. Whose boat was that? That doesn't exist anymore.
another local who was incredibly gracious in just giving us that boat. You know, I sort of originally that wasn't in the early drafts. It was going to be a much smaller contained situation, but I wanted a bit of a spike at that point in the film. So we reached out to a couple people, and he was like, yeah, you could have this boat. I don't need it. So we had one shot to get that right.
I that's what I was going to say. You had better do it right the first time.
Love how we're not saying what happens to
we had one shot and two cameras to do it. So
good. Okay. Yeah, I try not to give away any spoilers.
You have to watch it.
Tantalize the audience to see what's actually we're talking about. Minnesota. So you said you're from Pennsylvania.
I'm not actually from Pennsylvania, but my grandfather spent some time there and stuff. I was an Army brat, so I moved around a lot, and I had never spent any time in Minnesota actually. But when I started learning about the locations there and the folklore and all that, I kind of fell in love with the area. Now, after the time spent there and having the film play there and all that, it feels a bit like a second home. It's kind of nice up there.
So basically, you came up, you heard the legends, you came up with the story, and then you filmed it.
Yeah, pretty much.
So that's the chronological order.
When I saw the little town of Grand Marais first, when I saw that for the first time, just kind of, I wanted to set the whole story there because it was such a unique little charming town. But then the more I explored the area, the script got bigger and the legends got bigger and the logistics for the production got more complicated.
So, time period. So you wrote the play, the movie, when you had 25 days, 26 days to film it. And then post-production was how long?
Post-production, I feel like when I watch the movie, I feel like it's still going on in my head, you know what I mean? But I think I wrote it, and I wrote this one pretty quick in just a couple of weeks, but I sat on it, the idea, for almost a year. Then the 25 days of filming, and then the post went on for, it went on. It felt like a quick post-production, and then we had it premiere in L.A. and Atlanta, and then we went back and we tweaked some things and all that. So I think we finished it in January or something, this January.
Post. Okay.
So that's less than a year and a half turnaround.
Yeah, the whole thing.
That's pretty good. Yeah. That's good. Yeah. Especially it's a complicated story, location wise, wardrobe wise, and then the length of the film. It's a good size. It's not somebody's 20-minute short. It's a full length film.
Yeah, yeah. So. And our post production, we kind of were out of money in a lot of ways, so we had to kind of piecemeal our post-production. And Rachel, who started off as just, an actor in the film, became essentially a post-production, a producer on the film, too, getting involved in that side of things. But we pulled it together.
So I have to ask Rachel about one of the co-stars, and I'm not giving anything away because he's in one of the first scenes. Mm-hmm. Your robot travel companion.
Right. When you meet Lyle and you see how she lives, and then you see what she has in the front seat of her car, I think it. Hopefully, you are curious when you meet them, and you're wondering, well, what's the story there? But Mr. the Wondering Robot is my travel companion. He is a hitchhiking robot, essentially. I think when we were just originally discussing where he came from, what his story was, Daniel had mentioned being inspired by a robot that actually existed in a similar way that it inspired. But what's interesting is, as you find out throughout the story, is how important Mr. is in the relationship area for Lyle's life, how she is sort of compensating for a lot of things that she's lost through an inanimate object, and why he's relevant and why he talks the way that he does, and why he she just can't bear to leave him with a safer family,
right.
Why she can't let him go, and that was interesting to explore, because I think what I love and what challenges me the most is an actor who, you're given a challenge to make something come alive, make something feel authentic, and actually experience those emotions to the best of your ability. To work with an object instead of a person, instead of somebody you can look in their eyes and have a human moment with, I had to really fabricate that.
Yes.
And Daniel really coached me through some moments with him that helped and that brought me to a place where hopefully the audience is seeing the sentimental relationship and seeing Lyle's attachment to him. Hopefully that communicates clearly so much of what she is compensating for and mm-hmm. why he's sort of a living-ish, breathing coping mechanism.
I mean, he's in the trailer, so I'm not giving anything away.
No.
Where did you come up with this idea?
It was a thing that was called Hitchbot. I read an article in 2011 or 12 or something years ago, and it was it was essentially like this beer keg with a face on it, and you sit it on the side of the road in Canada, and it was a kind of a social experiment where you people on the highway will pick him up, take a picture with him, and put it on Twitter, and then the goal was to see if he could get across the country to get to Toronto or somewhere. And he did, but then the experiment kind of continued into the United States, and then within a couple of days, he was torn apart and left on the side of the road or whatever.
I remember reading about this.
Yeah.
It almost reminds me, there's also the traveling gnome and all that stuff,
yeah.
But I definitely remember reading about this.
Yeah, so yeah. I was kind of weirdly touched by that story, and I wanted to take some elements of that and expand on it, and then I wondered what it would be like to have sort of this GPS travel bot thing, who kind of a traveling Wikipedia thing instead, to see who could be kind of your friend, but also kind of tell all of those, you know, the wandering people of the world, kind of where they are and what they could see while on the highways, you know.
And you can play Nintendo on him.
Yes, you can.
You
can do a lot of things.
Time and for that.
Definitely, yeah. In the world of Alexa and Google Roommate or whatever it calls it. I mean, you could tell that you wrote the character of the robot the right way, because at one point Rachel's running through the woods and he loses his foot, and I was like, oh my god, is she going to go back and pick it up? So you actually feel for this robot, and then he falls at one point, and you're like, I hope the screen didn't break.
And I feel that way when I watch it. I'm like, he fell really hard. That is not good. He is not going to recover from that.
And we ended up getting one of my favorite actors to voice the robot.
I was
going to
mention
Harold Perrineau he did that for us, so he brought it to life, too.
He was in Lost and Oz and quite a few other TV shows, so... Yeah,
The Edge, one of the greatest films of all time.
Oh yeah,
and his daughter is his daughter.
Yeah,
his daughter is Rachel's best friend, Addie.
Yeah,
Addie. Yeah. Well, you are the closing film for the festival.
Yeah, we're psyched.
How does that feel?
It's an honor. It's an honor.
Feels really good. It feels really good. I've heard great things about the festival. You guys seem to have had a really good turnout, and for it being here in the second year, just everybody's enthusiasm and the momentum behind it. It's really exciting.
It's been a great festival. I mean, you're my 35th podcast, so it's been great.
Yeah.
Just talking with the different filmmakers, and your film is a great film. It's beautifully done, wonderfully acted.
Nice.
And the dialogue and the whole story is great.
I appreciate that. Thank you.
Tend to agree.
I mean, you could see the quality of it in just the costumes and the expansiveness of this film. So I'm looking forward to seeing it on the big screen. I've already seen it, as you know, by what I've already told you about what I know about it.
Well, yeah.
But on my Kindle, so now I'll be able to see it on the big screen.
Much more of an experience. The color palette alone is worth it, I think. Just it's a beautiful love letter to Minnesota, as I've heard you say. Aside from this story, just celebrating a place in America I had never been to before and got to work in and fall in love with this state. And it's been such a neat thing to see how it's unraveled. And
yeah, I think people want to go there after they see it, you know.
Like, I want to go back in the fall and experience it there just on a vacation.
It's a pretty incredible area.
I want to go in the winter where they have those ice sculptures and things like that, too.
Yeah. That'll be the sequel.
Yeah. And see Mary Tyler Moore's statue.
Mm-hmm.
That's sweet.
What do you have next coming up? Anything?
Oh, yeah. There's, you know, the thing about my job is... there's always stokes in the fire. You're working, and the hope is that you always are keeping the momentum. And I usually take these very long vacations because I know I'm going into a long job or a long production. But I have nothing lined up for the fall, which is a very interesting place to be because that means it's a blank canvas that with auditioning, I could say yes to anything. Anything that comes in is an open door to a potential job that could be really exciting. But it's also frightening because you always wonder, is this the last thing I'm ever going to work on? Is this the last film I'm ever going to make?
No,
and the honesty behind that... that realization is it could be a scary time, but it's also how I choose to look at it is something is coming. I believe that, and just got to put the work in. And I'm in classes, and I'm staying involved with short films and projects that my friends are doing to sort of stay invigorated for the art of filmmaking, which is my my love. And we'll see what comes. I really don't know.
Where are you based?
I'm in Atlanta.
Atlanta.
Yeah.
Which is a good filmmaking area.
Oh, it's wonderful.
Yeah, it's huge.
There's always something to get your hands. Always some set to be on, whether you're helping a friend with something or you're... I'm actually writing a short right now to hopefully shoot in the winter. And when I'm not working on Virginia, Minnesota, I'm trying to write and create some things from the ground up. Slowly but surely.
And Daniel, you have another film in you?
Yeah, I've been trying to get this bed and breakfast thriller, I call it, off the ground that I've I'm pretty proud of. It's a little very different from Virginia, Minnesota.
Oh, yeah.
But in between Virginia, Minnesota and that one, it's just kind of the odd film jobs here and there. But I'm always working on something.
Well, the fact that it's a bed and breakfast, it seems like it's going to be a lot less location shooting.
Yeah, that's the goal. I learned some lessons.
Reel it in, Daniel. Yeah. Reel it in.
Yeah, one location, one character. No.
Well, I want to thank you both for coming.
Thanks for having us.
Congratulations on the film.
Appreciate
and that. I'm looking forward to seeing it on the big screen tonight. It's a beautiful film. But before we leave, I'd like to thank our wonderful sponsors, Blog Talk Radio, for providing an excellent platform for our podcast. I'd also like to thank Ateez Organic Coffee and Tea Cafe in Kew Gardens. They've been our host throughout the entire festival, and they've been giving our ticket holders and badge holders 10% discount for the coffee and bakery goods, and it's been delicious coffee. And even though the festival may be ending soon, continue to patronize Ateez. They've been a wonderful host, kept me totally caffeinated throughout the entire 36 podcasts that we've had. And even though that the festival may be, this year's festival may be coming to an end, please continue to look at us on our website, www.kewgardensfestivalofcinema.org. We'll have photos so that you can reminisce about how wonderful this festival was, and also to have updates on what's coming up in year three. These podcasts are also on the website, and you can listen to all or any of the 36 that I've had the pleasure of talking to these wonderful guests with. So thank you very much. This is Craig Horsley signing off. Till next time.